morning, everyone. Ooh, I'm loud. Yeah, I know. It's great to be here. Happy Father's Day to everyone. It's interesting. I think I've told you all before, I'm a little bit of a crybaby, and I get emotional about stuff. I miss my dad still. I'm a dad, and 40, and so Father's Day, I usually, we used to always go back to visit my dad, same thing with my mom, and I felt like it wouldn't be fair to my mom if I went back on Father's Day, because I didn't go back to see her on Mother's Day. But it's interesting, because I was thinking about how technology works, and I remember last week, I was up here, I was singing and stuff, and I think I told a couple people even, I said, I promise that the air conditioner is going to be working when I get up here next week because of how hot I was. And thank God for breezes, because he certainly showed me it is not in our control. And a lot of times we have to remember that. And so thank you, God, for the reminder. It reminds me of my dad. And I remember telling my dad one time that I was going to go to visit some friends at a party. And he said, oh, are you now? He's like, because you didn't ask me, you told me. And I thought, well, yeah, I'm going to do it. I was kind of, you know, I think I was about 15, 16. I wasn't quite driving yet, but I was feeling myself. And so I thought I won, you know, because I went. But then I got home, and he had a surprise for me because he had taken my key. I didn't know. I wasn't thinking anything about the key. You know, you're just thinking, yeah, I got what I wanted. So I spent quite a few hours outside until my mother finally found some compassion and said, let the boy in, he's gotta go to sleep. So what I wanna look at is continuing to go in the same series that we've been looking at in Jesus' ministry. I want us to take a look at how Jesus carried himself throughout his ministry. And the title, if you wanna give it a title, the sermon is Your Spiritual Foundation, or if you want another title, What's Beneath You? And that'll make a lot more sense here in a few more minutes. So because I can't make promises on anything, apparently, the only thing I will promise is that I will try to be short. I mean, you know, I'm looking around at some of the fathers, and they can just taste the steak, you know, like they can just taste that dinner. And so I want to make sure you guys get out of here and are able to enjoy your Father's Day. When we think of Jesus in his ministry, how Jesus carried himself, how he walked, the way that he lived, one of the things that really stands out about his ministry is the fact that Jesus performed a lot of miracles. In fact, that's kind of the highlight that most people think of when they think of Jesus' ministry. They think of the miracles. And so the question that someone asked me this a while back, but the question is, what exactly is a miracle? If you think of a miracle, we hear that name, kind of that term thrown around a lot. You know, we have miracle babies, and there's a movie that came out about the hockey team called Miracle. We have these different ways in which individuals think of miracles. And the definition, or the common definition of it, is a miracle is an event not explicable by nature or scientific laws. Such an event may be attributed to a supernatural being, a deity, magic, a miracle worker, a saint, or a religious leader. So basically, a miracle is something that is done that defies what we think of in nature, something that naturally happens. So it's like gravity keeps us on the ground. So if I jump up and start floating, which I'm not, but if I jumped up and started floating, you would think, oh my goodness, it's a miracle. Something of that nature. What I really want us to take some time to do, since none of us are miracle workers in here, what I want us to focus on is not necessarily the miracles, because Jesus had powers and different things that set him apart because he was in very nature God. He could do these things, okay? What I want us to look at is the other part of Jesus' ministry that wasn't all the miracles. Now, up here, and it's a little difficult to read because there's literally so many of them, I was, past couple weeks, I've been going through the different gospels and trying to chronically set up all of the miracles in order. And silly me, I should have just went to Google in the first place and found it, because there was several places where you can find them in order, including, it starts with him being born to a virgin mother, changing water into wine, you know, healing of the sick, feeding of the thousands and their families, the centurion, the servant, raising Lazarus from the dead, the two blind men. You'll see all these different miracles. There's basically 40 of them, including him raising from the dead. My personal favorite is when he tells the brother to go out there and catch the fish, and the first fish he finds, he pulls out the two coins. We'll look at that later. But there's a common thread in all of these miracles that Jesus did. All these miracles that he was a part of, most of them during his actual ministry, there's a common thread. And that common thread is validation and service. What we find is that Jesus, by performing the miracles that he did, he validated himself as not just some other person. Because it's one thing for me to tell you that I'm going to come and I'm going to, you know, fix something at your house, or I'm going to help you by fixing a tire on your car or something. Well, I can validate myself by actually proving it, by doing it. And so that's what Jesus was doing in a lot of his miracles. But one of the things that often gets missed in what Jesus was doing is that you'll notice that practically all of his miracles were done serving other people. You'll find that they were always done, like, somebody's hungry, he's feeding them. Somebody's sick, he's healing them. That is the common thread we find. And so while we may not be miracle workers, the one thing we can do is serve. The first scripture I'd like to look at is John chapter 2. And we're going to be looking at John quite a bit. John chapter 2, and this, you don't even have to turn there, really. I'm just going to read it really quickly. But John chapter 2, verse 1 through 11. He says, and this was actually his noted first miracle. On the third day of the wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Dear woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied. I love that. It's the kind of like conversation I have with my mom. "Mom, why are you involving me in this?" "My time has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so. And the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now." This, the first of his miraculous signs Jesus performed at Cana in Galilee, he thus revealed his glory, and his disciples put their faith in him. Now we see that he's serving, but we also see that he's validating himself. He's validating himself and separating himself. He's showing that he is someone worthy to have their faith put into them. He is someone who they should believe in. He's validating them because they're following him around. And he is saying, "Yes, you picked the right horse. You chose the right person to follow. Yes, I'm that person who has come. The other thing is we see not only did he serve, but he served those who were the least. If we look over in Luke chapter 5, we'll see here, and this is a little bit shorter verse, in Luke chapter 5, verse 12 through 15, it reads, "While Jesus was in one of the towns, a man came along who was covered with leprosy. When he saw Jesus, he fell with his face to the ground and begged him, 'Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean.' Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. 'I am willing,' he said. 'Be clean.' And immediately the leprosy left him. Then Jesus ordered him, 'Don't tell anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them.' Yet the news about him spread all the more, so that crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sicknesses. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed." Now, there's plenty of areas, obviously, in different scriptures where we can look at how Jesus served people and how he healed people. The reason why I chose this one and the reason why this stands out is because it's important to understand that, you know, in 2016, if you find somebody with a skin disease, you find somebody who's sick, someone who has something that is whatever condition it is, it's not considered wrong or taboo to associate yourself with them. This illustrates a very important point about Jesus and his ministry in that not only did he heal him, and it validated that he was the Messiah, but he didn't just heal anyone. He healed somebody who was a leper, somebody with a skin disease, someone who he was not supposed to be touching. It was considered unclean to associate with them. We see the same thing if we look at the woman with the bleeding condition. Often people who were blind or they had some other malady, like the person who had dropsy, which was a term that basically meant a lot of fluid in the body. He was dealing with, touching, healing, working with people, and it wasn't just that he was healing, he was healing people he wasn't even supposed to be around. When we think of ourselves and how we serve, and I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but when we think about the ways in which we serve, do we actually serve like Christ did? Are we willing to serve people who, frankly, are considered untouchables? People who are considered the least and lower than us. People who are not, maybe in our minds, on our level. People who maybe have, if you look back, that was 2,000 years ago, but if you look now, what would a person in this situation look like today? Who do we consider the lepers of our society, the bleeding people of our society? As disciples, we're called to serve in the same way that Jesus did. And I want to look at one more passage here in Mark chapter 10, if you can flip over there. Mark chapter 10. And starting in verse 42. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." I want to take a little pause here and think about this scripture, because when we think about being the least, when we think about being last, when we think about being a servant to all, I want us to reflect personally, okay? And we can look at this as a congregation, as a church, but we can look at this individually and think about when we come here, when we show up to church, do we come to serve or to be served? Now, that may seem like an easy question to answer, but I want to give you a little analogy, okay? And I think about this because, like, when I go home to visit my family, or because we're a family, and when I go home to visit my family, and as a child, I remember that my mom and my aunts and different ones, they kind of did everything, grandparents. Well, things changed, and we grew up, and my sister, she started wanting to cook. You know, we just had the fish fry last week, and anybody knows this, it was this amazing joke on Facebook, but talking about how, you know, when black people get together for their cookouts, everybody has to know who made the potato salad. You know, you don't just eat everybody's potato salad. One of the things that happens is, and I bring up the idea of a family and a meal, because sometimes we can show up and not realize that we're here for the meal. We're not to be here to eat. You know, I give the example, like, if you don't like the food, sometimes we don't like what's cooked. Sometimes, you know, the young person comes along and they're, you know, young lady, young mother, they've grown up, and it's like they want to cook, and it's like everybody knows she can't cook. Everybody knows that her potato salad is not good. Everybody knows that maybe the chicken won't be quite done right. And rather than criticizing and demeaning her and making her feel bad, why not help her? Why not show her how to do it right? Because if we're coming to actually serve rather than be served, see, we're most interested in the meal, meaning participating in the meal with one another, than we are in actually getting our bellies full. You know, she's not here today. I think of Miss Pauline and how, with the exception of when she was sick a couple of times, she's always here for the potluck. She's always here for the gathering after service. But Miss Pauline's a vegan. You may not have noticed it. She never eats anything downstairs. She'll bring something with her if she knows she's going to stay after service for the potluck. She can't eat the food there. And she doesn't mind. It's not like she's complaining or she's upset. But her willingness to be there, to take the pictures, to fellowship, to sit down and talk with you, she's there for the right reasons. When we show up to church here on Sunday, are we here for the right reasons? Are we here to serve or to be served? Because here's the thing. I'm not the best speaker in the world. Ben is not the best speaker in the world. We're going to mess up. You know, the songs may not be just quite right. The air conditioner might be broke.
All right, now.
But did we show up with the attitude to serve or to be served? Mm. You know, I think about, like, in Sunday school, we got our Sunday school going and kids are showing up, and it's beautiful because it's like Kay and William, and it's just like one-on-one, you know. There's not 10 kids there, but if you're willing to show up to serve, you'll come to show up for the one kid. Doesn't have to be 20 of them. Doesn't have to be 10 of them, 5 of them. Doesn't even have to be kids that you just like or love or that you've known for years. You show up to serve, not to be served. When we think about our neighbors, our community, when we think about our friends, we think about the people that we work with, do we show up to serve them or to be served? If we were showing up to serve, maybe we might not get as much out of Wednesday night Bible study because we've been to Wednesday night Bible studies all the time. But are you showing up to serve or to be served? That small group meeting, I don't feel like it. I'm tired, I'm working, I'm busy. But maybe it's not for you to show up to eat in the first place. Maybe the reason why you're showing up to that small group, maybe the reason why you're showing up to that neighbor's house, maybe the reason why you're doing it is because you can help someone else. You can be of benefit to someone else. Who are we serving right now in our life? If you actually think about it and say, can you actually think of a person that you're serving? Whose life are you even involved in? Outside of the normal comfort zone that we have. And then, believe it or not, it's not the most comfortable now, but this is a comfort zone for many of us. Yeah. Outside of these walls, who are we serving? Turn to John chapter 13. John chapter 13. I want to look at one of the most powerful examples of Jesus serving in his ministry. Ask ourselves, are we here to serve? John chapter 13, verse 1 through 17, it says, it was just before the Passover feast, Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. The evening meal was being served, and the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. This is very important, and we're going to come back to that. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. He was dressing himself in the garb of a servant. That is what servants would do. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." "Then, Lord," Simon Peter replied, this dude is a trip, "not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." Jesus answered, "A person who has had a bath needs only to wash his feet. His whole body is clean, and you are clean, though not every one of you." For he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he said not everyone was clean. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I have done for you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." When we serve, we are validating that God sent us. We are validating the point that we are in likeness with Christ. I go back to the very beginning of this where he says that Judas had already been prompted by the devil to betray him. So think of it like this. Imagine if somebody you really respect, somebody who you really trust, somebody who you really know to be a great example, comes as a slave, as a servant. And they're not only washing your feet, but consider this. He's washing the feet of a man who's going to turn him over to be crucified. He is turning himself, he is washing the feet of a man who is going to deny him three times. He's washing the feet of men who are going to scatter and run, who in his deepest agony, they couldn't even stay awake while he was praying. He wasn't just washing feet. He's washing feet of people who knew him on a personal level, who had a relationship with him on a personal level, but were going to disappoint him, even to the point of turning him over for murder. And so we ask ourselves, when we serve people, are we willing to serve people who are known enemies? Are we willing to serve people who we know are not going to show reciprocity? Are we willing to serve people who we know aren't going to quite get it? They're not really into the message of Christ. They're not really understanding of what it means to be a disciple, but I'm going to serve them anyway. Whether they show up to church, whether they study the Bible, whether they become Christians, what, regardless, I'm going to serve them anyway. Because this is what Jesus did. And then the extent of the servitude. Because one of the keys to understanding who we're serving and how we're serving like Jesus and his example, we cannot possibly have, and I apologize for the slides, I lost my place. We have to have humility in order to have the example of Christ in how we serve. Humility is the key. Humility is what separates us from plenty of people who say that they love Jesus. In John chapter 21, and this is the last verse, John chapter 21, 15 through 17. Says, when they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lamb. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. How do we revive this church? How do we help this church to grow, to have an impact? How can we show the example of Christ in this community, in all of Delaware? How can we show that we truly are serving God? We have to feed his sheep. But feeding his sheep requires serving. It requires loving. It requires forgiving. It requires a great amount of humility, because you're going to take the fall for a lot of things that, frankly, you shouldn't have to. You're going to be blamed for things. You're going to be picked on. People are going to persecute you. Many different things. But the way that we show that we are like Christ is through our humility and our willingness to feed his sheep. This is about fulfilling our purpose and rebuilding the foundation. That's all we've been looking at, is the foundation of Jesus' ministry. And in order to rebuild that, we have to understand that it's about feeding the sheep. What are we willing to do to go out there and serve like Jesus served? Whose feet are we willing to wash? Whose bills are we willing to pay? Whose car are we willing to fix? Whose hair are we willing to go out and get done? Whose hands are we willing to go out and get painted? Whose clothes are we willing to buy? Whose time? No money, just time. Who are we willing to invest our time in the way that Jesus did? I've got some questions I wanted to consider. Do you believe, and just be honest with yourself, do you believe that serving makes a difference? Do you believe that by serving the way that Jesus did and what we saw how a difference he made, how he validated himself, how we can validate ourselves as Christ's examples just by being willing to serve. But do we actually believe that? Is there a race to the bottom among us? Are we willing to be the most humble? Are we willing to be the least? Are we willing to do the work and serve even if we never get credit, even if no one ever knows, even if seemingly on the outside from our vision and our vantage point, it meant nothing to the person? Are we willing to have that level of humility because Christ told us to? Do we allow others to serve us? You know, Jesus said, you know, unless you allow me to do this, you have no part of me. Are we willing to allow others to serve us? Or is our pride, again, going back to humility, is our pride such that, no, I won't allow a person to serve me? Are we here to eat, or did we come for the meal? You know, living like Christ is not an eating contest. You know, we come and we show up, and yes, we need to be fed. Yes, we need our spirit fed. Yes, we need to be taught. Yes, we need to learn, but when we show up, when I drive those 700, 800 miles back to Ohio, when we go to Kentucky to visit my wife's family, I am certainly not showing up just for the food. That's a long way to go for some stuffing and some ham. That's a long way to go. And I'm not even supposed to be eating that stuff anyway because I'm on a diet. So that's a long way to go for that food. I'm showing up because my wife loves her family, because I love her family. That's why we show up. We show up here for the meal. We bring others so that they can come to the meal. And the final question I have is, what does the least among us look like today? It's easy to identify in the scriptures that, you know, we see the lepers and all those people that Jesus healed, the blind people. Obviously, if you had to be raised from the dead, you were in trouble. So we see that that's the least. The question is, who's the least among of us right now? Not in this room, but when we get out, when we leave these doors today, who's the least among us when we go outside? Who's the worst off? And are we, as his disciples, finding them, looking to serve them? Have we considered what our life would be like if Jesus wasn't willing to serve us? If he wasn't willing to do what he did for us? Have you considered your life if you maybe have never taken Jesus on, committed to him in baptism? If this is something that you haven't done, you have to understand that allowing Jesus and participating in him serving you is necessary. To understand all the things we're talking about here today about serving and humility and validating our role as a Christian, we have to first understand that it starts with a commitment. Before we walk out here, I want to challenge anybody who hasn't accepted Jesus to accept him today, now, because I'm about to end in a minute. Now, like, take the time to really consider what it is that my life means if I'm living like Jesus versus not having Jesus at all. There's so much to understand. There's so much that we can give in his name, but we have to be willing to do it. And for those of us who have been Christians for a long time, in order for this church to grow, in order for this church to have the impact it needs to have, we have to be willing to serve the way that Jesus served, humble ourselves, and validate that this is God's church. God is moving in this church. Please stand as we sing our song of invitation.